We've become a culture that puts the fear of lawsuits ahead of good care for mothers and babies. And while emergency obstetric care is essential, giving birth in a hospital definitely has its place. And some of these interventions really are important, but we are overusing medical technology at the expense of maternal and infant health.
You're listening to the Untaming Podcast.
Rewild the child.
Here is your host, Emily Giles.
Hey, I'm Emily. Welcome back to the Untaming Podcast. Today it is the full flower moon here in the Southern Hemisphere, and we are well and truly in the middle of spring here. This is the second part of two solo episodes I'm releasing. If you haven't listened to that one, I talk about EMFs, how I got into rewilding, the different ways that my family rewilds, a little about natural human movement, and then I shared all of my birth stories and my postpartum experiences. You know, when I started this podcast, one of my goals was to not make the podcast about me. I wanted to come across as a fellow parent. There are so many podcasts out there where the host takes on the role of like a guru and ultimately ends up trying to sell you something. I never wanted to capitalize off the listeners because to me that just goes against the egalitarianism of rewilding, and capitalism and civilization are on the other side of the pendulum of rewilding. So no thanks. I wanted to come across as relatable and share some things I'd learned about a bunch of various topics which altogether fall under the umbrella of rewilding by interviewing the experts who'd actually dedicated their lives to these individual specialities. So despite having edited over 70 interviews now that I have done for this podcast, that last one was by far the hardest for me in that I cringed so much at myself. The main thing I did not want to do was come across as some know-it-all who liked the sound of her own voice. I was imagining all of you listeners switching off once you realised I was the only one who'd be talking all episode. So if you did and I failed, I'm sorry, that was definitely not my intention, and I really hope I can reach that goal in this second part at least. So today I will share why I chose to free birth my kids, what my self-directed prenatal care looks like, my EC practices, also known as diaper-free or nappy-free, why I chose to homeschool my kids, and then I will also share some readings of the work of people whom I was not able to interview this season but thought very important to share. These excerpts are from Sterner Suisa on how we communicate with our children and Arthur Haynes on a range of topics related to rewilding. So I'll start with my choice to free birth. I'm reading these as I wrote them down 7 years ago, prior to my first birth, along with a bunch of statistics, pages of quotes from medical books that resonated with me, and several pages full of complications, you know, their chances and percentage, how to identify them, how to handle them, what causes them, how to prevent them, and also how to prepare for them. Because, you know, that's who I am. I take a very analytical approach to these things. This was never a decision I took lightly or, you know, just tried to wing it or that sort of thing. But I won't read all of that out, obviously. I will just read out these. So I split my reasons into, first I did a reasons against a hospital birth, and then reasons for an unassisted birth. So I'll read out the ones against a hospital birth first. So yes, my reasons against a hospital birth, these are just my reasons. Lying down, you know, birthing on your back is the number one worst position because it's going against gravity. There's nothing to push against. The pelvis is 1 to 2 centimeters narrower than it could be in other positions, causing a prolonged labor and a much greater chance of tearing. Hospital statistics for proliferating complications. Complications are so much more likely since the natural birth process is affected just by being in a hospital. Therefore, labor is a lot slower, and interventions are a lot more likely to be used or suggested or encouraged to speed up the birth process. The umbilical cord, it's almost always cut immediately after birth in a hospital, but it was discovered in 1995 that doing so deprives the baby of much needed iron and oxygen. It should be kept intact until the cord is white and finished pulsing, preferably until after the placenta is born. So the absolute minimum you'd want to wait is 2 minutes, you know, 5 to 10 minutes is better, half an hour. I always made sure I waited at least an hour before cutting or burning the cord. My fourth reason against a hospital birth, that restriction to walking and moving and eating and drinking, that inability to feel comfortable, and then the loss of energy due to that no sustenance. The unfamiliar place, people, sounds and smells, all to prevent the mother's ability to feel calm, relaxed and safe. The pressure to speed up birth, that pressure to give in to unwanted interventions if labour is moving too slowly for the hospital standards. Continuous fetal monitoring, since that prevents the mother from moving freely, once again hindering labour, and in the monitoring itself bothers the baby, increasing the chances for fetal distress. In uninterrupted first hours, some of these things you can get in a hospital birth, but both the mother and baby's health depend on being together skin to skin and breastfeeding immediately after birth for at least an hour. And hospitals compromise this with measuring and cleaning and eye gooping and monitoring and giving the vitamin K shot. The drive, driving in labour is not the most comfortable. The last thing I want is the stress, rush and discomfort of driving to a place that I want to go to while in labour. Caesarean, you know, way too overused and encouraged unnecessarily. They definitely have their place, of course, but very dangerous in the moment, and it risks damage to the mother in future pregnancies. And babies born by a caesarean are more likely to have weakened immune systems for their entire lives due to them not going through the birth canal. Induction, this is frequently encouraged, especially in overdue mothers. Epidural is encouraged, the use of forceps, vacuum suction, episiotomies. Okay. And now here are my reasons for unassisted birth. These are my reasons for unassisted birth. You know, as helpful as medical professionals are, complications and interventions for both mother and baby are much more likely to occur when they are present at a birth rather than when they are not. Having medical assistance monitor pregnancy and birth has become so ingrained in our culture over the last 100 years that women now obliviously follow what they are told rather than learning to educate themselves on the pregnancy and birth process. To me, I feel a lot more comfortable with the decision to shoulder the responsibility of taking care of myself and my baby than to unwittingly put that control for my own health into the hands of someone else. In terms of low-risk mothers, I'm even more so on the low-risk end of the spectrum because of my age, physical health, nutritional health, fitness, and not just my family history, but also that of my husband. For the most serious and common complications are recognizable long before going into labor, noticeably like placenta previa, in which case, you know, we'll have plenty of advance warning and preparation knowing we will have to go to hospital should those situations arise. And in the highly unlikely chance that the other serious yet rare complications that can occur during labor happen, which are much more likely in a hospital due to their common use of interventions, we know how to recognize them and handle them long enough to get to hospital. The safest, painless, and quickest birth for me and all other low-risk mothers is to birth like any other mammal, uninterrupted, alone, in a quiet, dark, safe place. I have no desire for unnecessary, stressful vaginal exams before, during, or after birth. Having my cervix measured is completely unnecessary, and the stress of it raises my blood pressure. I also don't want someone else telling me when I can or can't push based on my dilation. This is the same way that most women in the world birth today, and how all women birthed up until 100 years ago before doctors, hospitals and drugs became commonplace and women were taught to fear childbirth. Hemorrhaging chances increase drastically when the placenta is rushed, the normal unassisted birth of a placenta is approximately an hour. You know, unfortunately, midwives often have protocols they have to follow, which means that they will be obligated to induce the placenta if it is not out within their expected time frame, regardless of whether the mother's health is stable or not. Having an unfamiliar person around when I'm in such a vulnerable state makes me feel uncomfortable and therefore going to increase my chances of a slower labour. And having learnt everything that I have so far about birth and labour, the idea of having a midwife really discourages me now. The only circumstance I would now accept one is if they were free, did not speak to me, touch me, or be in the same room with me at all, so I couldn't see them. And if they were certified in spinning babies techniques for labour and birth and were an IBCLC, internationally board certified lactation consultant. And would then leave once we knew everything was fine. Their sole purpose would be the comfort that we could call them over to help in the unlikely event that we needed them. And then I guess think of how much you care for your children. Like, would I, as a mother, really do anything to jeopardise my own life as well as my child's? Or would I be campaigning to ensure the best possible outcome for both of us? Now, I also have some other things to read out here that I wrote down when I was interviewed 4 years ago after my second birth. So this is like how I came to the decision, basically, to free birth. When I found out I was pregnant with my first child, I joined a bunch of Facebook groups. At the time, I already knew I wanted to have a home birth. So I joined Facebook groups, and that's when I first heard of unassisted birth. And I thought, well, these women must be crazy. But I decided to stay in the groups for a few weeks before writing them off. And I quickly learnt that they were not crazy at all, but were highly informed on all things birth. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll consider free birthing if I have a third or subsequent children. I had already naturally, and unrelated to my discovery of free birth, began looking into self-prenatal care. I was already paying attention to the extra nutrients and vitamins and yoga and spinning babies and reading about what typically happens at prenatal appointments and realizing that by purchasing a few supplies that I didn't already have, like a fetoscope and a blood pressure cuff, I could actually do it all myself. I went through the public system, this was when we lived in Portugal, to have an ultrasound, and they did an internal ultrasound without even asking, when I had known in advance of going that I only needed an external ultrasound. You know, they were rude, they barely spoke to me just between themselves, unless I deliberately cut in to ask a question. I only had one ultrasound with all three of my children. I deliberately made sure it wasn't in the first trimester when the embryo is still so small that you don't want to be harming the tiny little, it's not even an embryo, is it? Zygote? When the baby is still so small that you don't want to harm them with the effects of the ultrasound. And I also didn't want to have it much later because the closer you get to 20 weeks, that's when they'll do a full anatomy scan. So it's a very long time, half an hour or an hour, I believe, that they are scanning your uterus. I wouldn't want my baby fetus to be exposed to an ultrasound for that long, which is why I only ever had one ultrasound with each of them. And that was purely to find out the location of the placenta. I thought that was very important. You've got to make sure that it's not covering your cervix. And also to check how many babies were in there, to make sure there was just the one, or if there was more than one, to adjust the diet accordingly. And to make sure the basic overall baby was developing as normal. At that point, you can really just see the skeleton and the bones in the head, so as long as they were all where they're supposed to be, then I was satisfied to continue on the rest of the pregnancy without an ultrasound. I come from New Zealand where midwives are free, and at the time I was living in Portugal and I was initially put off by the cost of a midwife, and then I began learning about the commonly used interventions and their cascading effect. And I was beginning to consider free birthing our first child. I asked on Facebook groups to find out how others had felt confident to free birth their first children. And that's when I discovered Ina Mae Gaskin's books. So I decided to read them and a bunch of other books. and I watch some TED Talks before making a decision. If you look at me, I don't really have any hips. I have quite a boyish figure. I definitely do not have what you would consider childbearing hips. And I remember giving myself a pelvic exam based on one of the midwifery books I was reading. An internal pelvic exam. And that reassured me that my body could push a baby out. Because despite not having childbearing hips, when you look at me on the outside, well, I've done it 3 times now, so my body could definitely push a baby out. So I began making a list of every single complication I could find related to birth. And I tried to learn as much as I could about the causes, the symptoms, the prevention, and how to handle them, like I mentioned earlier on. And eventually, once I'd learned how damaging outside influence could be on birth and how possible it was to handle the whole thing by myself, I knew that it was what I wanted. There's a lot of back and forth about whether to go ahead with this. I had family members who weren't totally on board with the idea. At around 37 weeks, that was when my husband and I finally decided that, yes, we could do the whole thing. Like, I told him that I could do the whole thing on my own without him there. And so he said, okay, let's do it then. And that was it. But we ended up letting our families continue to believe we were having a midwife. So having now gone through it, I've reached a few conclusions, you know, that any midwife, obstetrician, nurse, doctor, or other birth assistant who doesn't respect an undisturbed birth is not someone I would ever trust with the lives of myself or my child. You know, they don't have to be supportive of free birth, but respecting and understanding that birth should be undisturbed is, to me, the key to a knowledgeable birth assistant. And because of that, I'm also not interested in engaging with them about birth, because I don't want them to think that I, someone who is not a birth professional, am discrediting their training and experience. To have that stance, they're clearly very well trained and experienced, far more than me, but only in disturbed birth. And that's not something I'm remotely interested in, because I want far more for my children and I than to merely survive. I want to ensure the best possible start for my children. And that first step is to have an undisturbed birth. And I did have a bit of pushback from family members. And I was disappointed that even though I thought we were quite close and I had deep respect for them, they clearly didn't know me well enough to know that I would have researched this thoroughly and was making the best choice for my child. And for it to be implied that I was risking my child's life was an extra slap in the face. And I was almost like embarrassed for them, because even though they're highly intelligent people, they'd bought into so many misconceptions around birth. And also sad that their opinions reflected how ignorant the vast majority of people are about birth. I did have people say things like, oh, you were so lucky. And yes, I'm lucky I chose to free birth, because I would have had so many unnecessary and life-risking interventions had I had a midwife. And I even had someone say to me, I would have dragged my wife to hospital if she tried to endanger my baby like that. I'm not very good at confrontation or conflict, so obviously I just completely froze, but I so wish I'd said that, you know, fortunately my husband would never risk the lives of his wife and unborn child because of his own ignorance. And now, having gone through this 3 times now, I have to say that birth is so hard, so challenging, and such a life-altering experience. And I have only experienced it every time in optimal conditions. I couldn't imagine how difficult it would be in a hospital or with someone wanting to put their hand inside me or wanting to monitor the baby. You know, I've taken a very analytical approach to this rather than intuitive. I really need the stats and the numbers and to understand the process from a scientific and natural point of view, and yet I still reached the conclusion that free birth was the optimal choice for me despite approaching it analytically, because the evidence is there for physiological birth. You know, I'm reading something here that I wrote down 4 years ago. It just says, quoting 4 separate unrelated sources. So I haven't actually listed the sources, which is annoying, because I do vaguely remember reading this from different books. But what I've written is that 95 to 99% of all births can occur without intervention, yet in a hospital setting, at least 99% of births experience some sort of intervention, episiotomy, instrumental delivery, induction, augmentation, a managed third stage, artificial rupture of membranes, continuous monitoring, restrictions to free movement, medical pain relief. You know, we've become a culture that puts the fear of lawsuits ahead of good care for mothers and babies. And while emergency obstetric care is essential, giving birth in a hospital definitely has its place. And some of these interventions really are important, but we are overusing medical technology at the expense of maternal and infant health.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can join the discussions on our Facebook and Instagram pages. To hear more, subscribe for free on the podcast app on your smartphone. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you would like to offer feedback or suggest a guest, email us at untaming.podcast@gmail.com.